Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Back with the clearings, on with the clearings this month for quality of life, one of my favorite categories. And we have belief expert Lion Goodman back on the line. How you doing, Lion?
I am great, and the quality of my life is fantastic. How's yours?
That's fantastic. Oh, God, man. I love it. I love it. I have a great quality of life. I am one of those people that likes to appreciate the little things, if you will. So quality of life really tickles a lot of my fancy, how I spend my days, you know, the kinds of food I'm eating with the people I love. So yeah, I have a deep, deep love for this category personally. But we're here to talk about beliefs, man. Why don't we start with a little bit of an overview of quality of life, you know, how we spend our time, but also the things that we have. And the things that we have has come up on our podcast a lot, Lion. And one of the things that we've talked about before is this comparison, right? And especially how modern society seems to really encourage that comparison, right? Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And when I started thinking about this category, which I often do, I went to the definitions of each word. And I think it's really important to look at those definitions so we really know what we're talking about. Can I do that first?
Sure. Sure thing.
Great. So the definition of quality is the standard of something as measured against other things of a similar kind, the degree of excellence, a distinctive attribute or characteristic possessed by something or someone. So The quality of life is how you're measuring your life against other things, other lives, right? Either your internal desires that you're reaching or not reaching, or the expectations and standards of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So standards are ideas or things that are used to measure or norm or model in comparative evaluations. And then the question comes up, well, why do we compare? Now, why do we compare ourselves to others? Why do we judge other people?
Right.
And in my research and investigations, I've found that we judge others because that's what social animals do. They try to find their place in the social hierarchy. And the way wolves do it is that they nip each other. And the way chickens do it is that they peck each other. And the way baboons do it is they bop each other on the head. And we don't peck or bite or nip.
Right.
We measure internally, and we look at other people and we say, am I above them, which makes me feel good, or am I below them, which makes me feel bad? So this is called status assignment. And so judgment, internal judgment of ourselves or other people, is a way of measuring our status with regard to others. And I think it's really important. And then the question comes up, of course, for quality of life. Who set my standards? Standards about what I have or what I do or who I'm with or what I believe or how I look. The standard is either set internally, so you're intrinsically motivated, or it's set externally by other people's ideas or beliefs. And then now we've got an extrinsic or external motivation.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I think it's really important sort of ground for a conversation.
I absolutely agree. And I would say that your average human desire in modern first world society is probably brought on by someone else's stuff. Would you agree with that? I think that people have special things in their life. You know, everybody has some sort of passion or hobby. And I think that you sometimes desire better things within that. But I think most of the time, when people want to look better, for instance, appear better, do you feel like that comes from a place of society's standards, other people's judgments, people on Instagram or whomever it may be?
I think the majority of people do, in fact, look at other people's standards. They allow others to set their standards for them.
Right.
And of course, growing up, you know, we look at the media and we look at other people, and you know, I don't know anyone that didn't compare themselves to others in junior high school, which is when this social awareness starts creeping in. Even it's down in elementary schools now. So the TV and the media expose us to a very wide range of people. And our U.S. media has kind of infected the rest of the world with certain standards. This is how people look. This is how they act.
That's true.
This is how celebrities look. This is how celebrities act. If you're famous and you're liked by a lot of people, then you look like this. So, you know, women have this as a problem with body image, men with, you know, their money or the size of their car. which represents the size of other things.
So
yes, most people are
have used
external standards, except for those who've really done a lot of inner work and found out that their inner standards are much more important.
Well, isn't that the big one, Lion, is ask yourself why you want something nicer or more expensive or better? Because that seems to be the important question. Like, why do you want it?
Right. And so that's a good question. So when I want something, I can look at the source of that desire. You know, the Buddha said that desire is caused by attachment and not wanting things that we have and not having the things we want. So desire and attachment, not wanting to lose what we have, that's the source of suffering. And it's really true because people are suffering all over the world because they see something they want and can't have it. Whereas if you look at tribal cultures, they had enough of everything and they shared with the whole tribe and everybody was taken care of.
That's true.
So there wasn't this kind of unmet need or unmet desire. If they wanted more food, they went out and got it. If they wanted another basket, they'd make it.
Right. Well, let's talk about that then. Is it all manufactured? Because here's my kind of take on it. If you want to be more satisfied with your quality of life, you can either work towards the things you want and acquiring them, or go the other direction, which is what you said, like the Buddhist monks do, and just work on your attachment to those things. Try to rid yourself of those attachments. Now, me personally, I don't really want to live like a Buddhist monk. I don't know if that makes me, you know, less spiritually evolved, but what do you think of that idea?
Well, rather than thinking about lowering your standards, I think it's important to say what's important to me. What are my standards? What are my internal standards? And importance is a measurement of value. How much do I value that thing and how important is it to me?
Yes, exactly. That's the real wealth.
Right.
That's a really great point.
Right. So it turns out that the true quality of life comes when you are practicing the virtues.
Right.
When your character is, you know, when you're practicing what you want your life to be at the level of qualities like peace and love and kindness. So if I'm practicing peace and love and kindness, if I have a kind heart and a loving heart, I'm going to enjoy whatever I have and whatever I'm doing and whoever I'm with more than if I have a desirous heart or a jealous heart or an envious heart.
Right. So not about lowering your standards, but maybe shifting your perspective and shifting your meaning?
Right. Rather than just say, well, I'll take a smaller car and I'll settle for that, is to really look and say, well, what's really important? What does a car represent?
Yes.
Where did I get that idea? Where did I pick up those beliefs?
That's
is it a
point.
Status symbol? And how important is status compared to my savings for my future or my family's education or, you know, where I am inside of myself? So this is what everyone should be looking at and investigating. We have this wonderful opportunity to look within and see where our beliefs came from, what we believe, where they came from. And then do we really want those? Did they come from a higher self and the soul and the qualities that the soul wants to express? Or did they come from venality and materialism, which is what our country sort of runs on?
Right.
And by the way, you mentioned desire. And desire has been manufactured since the 30s when a guy named Bernays created what he later called public relations, but what he first started calling propaganda, which is actually manufacturing desire through advertising.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, I think it exists, but we really learned how to manipulate and accelerate and capitalize on that in the 1900s specifically. And then I would also make the point that people are kind of waking up to that because of people like you out there and programs like this, where people are talking about this sort of thing and kind of having a great awakening. So I do think it was a kind of a rough step, but do you feel like it was a step forward, a progression?
In terms of manufacturing desire?
In terms of having to go through that to learn what we are now learning and to shape the market as it is being shaped right now, where people are starting to talk about things like sustainability and conscious capitalism and all those things. I feel like there's a change amongst my generation specifically where they jive with what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And my generation was, you know, growing up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, we were the material generation. We wanted to have what they had on the TV program called Dallas, where everybody was rich and,
right.
and beautiful, right? And so you know, people in third world countries were watching Dallas and going, wow, the Americans, all the Americans live like that.
Wow.
So why don't we live like that? So we
right.
were creating this delusion that everybody in America was rich and famous, had a big car and a Texan accent. So yes, I think the millennials and the younger generations are seeing the falseness of that standard and going, that's crap. I've seen people die, you know, with all the toys, and they weren't any happier than somebody who died in poverty with an alone.
Right.
So I think there is a maturing of the human wisdom.
Yeah, I think
field
so. I hope so.
So that we can actually create lives that are better rather than just have more stuff.
100%. Let's just wrap about some maybe common limiting beliefs here before we get started. You know, one I see a lot, or something that I see a lot of limiting beliefs surrounding, rather, is how people spend their days. I see so many people who have lost control of their days, and it's usually due to some sort of belief or series of beliefs. You know what I mean?
Sure. It means that there's an external standard running their life, something outside of them. What are they running toward? What are they trying to achieve? Who are they trying to be and for whom? It's like, okay, I'm trying to be better. Really? For who?
Right.
Well, for them. Who's they? Well, those other people who are judging me. Well, who are they exactly? I don't know. I just heard that they were judging me. So when you really look inside, you find out that there's a lot of beliefs running you. But go ahead with the beliefs you were going to mention.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I see all the time is I have to stay busy. Some people are locked into, and you know, some people would characterize it as workaholism, but I'm not even sure it's that.
Right. So there's been this change in productivity. Productivity has been a standard in business because if you get your people to be more productive, you make more money. So this is, comes out of the capitalistic orientation toward, and it all started with the Protestant work ethic. So it goes way back.
Right.
But essentially, if you're busy, you won't go to hell.
Right.
The idle hands are the devil's playground. That's an old saying from the Puritan days, right? So keep busy, and then you won't fall into, you know, the devil's
hand. Right, and survival techniques that probably served a lot of people well, but it bled into capitalism, and then it bled into how we are running our everyday lives.
Exactly, right. So now we look around, and we're all trying to catch up with this myth of materialism, right?
Right, and impossibility,
will make
yes.
me happy.
Yes.
So I've got to work really hard, much harder than I would normally work, in order to catch up. Well, guess what? You'll never catch up. You know, everybody's going to have bigger toys than you.
Right.
Especially when you compare upwards. You know, if you start comparing downwards, you get a whole different view of your life. But everybody else looks busy, so I guess I'd better be busy to keep up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think the busyness is a huge one. One that I see and I really sympathize and, you know, I feel bad for people who have this belief is people who believe they don't deserve nice things.
Right. Or they don't deserve success, or they don't deserve happiness, or they don't, you know, that not deserving comes out of a very deep wound, which comes out of a very deep trauma. And it starts with babies who are not well cared for, and babies can't blame their parents. They can't say, wow, mom and dad are really screwed up. They're just not, they don't know how to take care of me. They don't know how to
right.
love each other or me. They really need some therapy, and maybe when I'm 20, I'll be okay.
So, man, we should put that on a card in the birthing unit in every hospital.
Right. So what babies do is that they blame themselves. If I'm not getting what I need, there must be something wrong with me.
Right.
And this is where the I don't deserve comes from. I don't deserve to be well cared for. Now, in babies, it's not verbal because they don't have a verbal mind yet, but they feel it. And they conclude it at the nonverbal level. So this not deservingness is a very deep core wound. It can be changed and cleared out with my technology as well as lots of other things like long-term therapy. And it really needs to change because if you believe you don't deserve things, then guess what? You will not get them because
100%.
Your mind is doing everything to sabotage you getting them. If you got something, you'd have to lose it. I was working with a client who kept making a lot of money and losing a lot of money, and making a lot of money and losing a lot of money. And when we got to the bottom of it, it was basically he had two beliefs in him. One is that I need to be successful, and the other is I'll never be successful.
Jeez.
And that came from his upbringing. And those kinds of conflicting beliefs can cause that kind of win-lose, win-lose, win-lose pattern.
Yeah, 100%. I absolutely agree. We released the bonus episode for Career Month, and Phil Hellmuth is a high-level poker player who said, I would see my peers destruct at the final table when they're looking at $1 million up top. And the reason is because they don't have their basically beliefs in order, and they're sitting in there and they're thinking to themselves, do I deserve to be here? I've been a bad dad. Do I deserve to win this money?
Right.
So I thought that was really fascinating.
Right.
Definitely ties in with the belief work. But let's round it out, Lion, with your thoughts. Do you want to share any common beliefs or set us up for the clearing or any final thoughts?
Sure. Again, this comes down to standards. What do I deserve? What do I need? What am I supposed to have? And so these external standards are, you know, how other people see me or how other people think of me or measure me. That's the measure of my quality of life. So that can include reputation and image and who's your friends and how they treat you. Another one is how much money or how many things or what kinds of things, that is the measure of my quality of life. You know, mm-hmm. So we're comparing to others. And so it's an external standard. Or my external circumstances, my job, my career, how my children are doing, you know, fitting in with the right crowd is the measure of me and my quality of life. So these are all extrinsic measurements of value, and they're all pretty empty. The standards that are important are the ones I mentioned, like, am I peaceful? Am I a loving person? Am I kind to everyone? And I looked up people's top regrets when they were on their deathbed, and it's really interesting. Can I read them to you?
Yes, please.
So these are the top 10. First of all, nobody says, gee, I should have spent more time at the office or made more money or accumulated more toys.
Right.
Nobody says that when they're about to die. These are the ones people do say. I never pursued my dreams and aspirations. I worked too much and didn't make time for my family. I should have made more time for my friends. I should have said, I love you a lot more and not held back my feelings.
Wow.
I should have spoken my mind more instead of holding back and resenting things. That's a big one.
Yeah.
I wish I had lived life more for myself instead of taking care of everybody else. That's the codependent one.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had cared less what other people think. There's that external standards business. I wish I hadn't worried so much. Worry is a real waste of energy.
Jeez.
I wish I had taken better care of myself. There's an old joke, you know, if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. Right? I wish I hadn't taken life for granted and didn't appreciate everything around me.
Wow.
I should have been the bigger person and resolved my conflicts. I wish I had had children. That's a big one for people. I should have saved more money for my retirement. That's huge. And we did that in the money, money segment.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the courage to live truthfully instead of trying to be liked or loved.
Jeez.
There it is again. I wish I'd known earlier that happiness is a choice and I could have chosen happiness earlier.
Whoa.
I wish I'd taken the chances and opportunities that came to me. I wish I hadn't fought over silly shit or argued on unimportant matters. And I wish I had lived in the now more of the time instead of the past and the future.
Wow.
So if you want to know what's important to you, you know, on your deathbed, what will you regret not doing or not having or not being?
Yeah. And how did you spend your days? Because that's what that ultimately is determined by. How did you spend your time?
Right.
Yeah. I love it, man. I love it. Well, let's dive into the clearing. Any final words here before we jump in?
Yeah. I have a quote, a couple quotes that I really love about this category. Albert Hubbard said, he has achieved success who has lived well, laughed often, and loved much. And Samuel Butler said, all animals except man know that the principal business of life is to enjoy it.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. So anyway, lots of smart people have said the same thing we're saying, and now we're going to dive into the belief clearing.
Love it.
Look at these beliefs about quality of life and who you measure yourself against and how those standards were set.
Love it, man. Thank you so much, Lion. I'm really excited for this. I know you listeners are as well. Let's dive right into the clearing.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you for joining me for Lifebook's Quality of Life Belief Clearing. As I said in the intro, when I investigate a topic, I like to look up the definition of words. It always leads me in interesting directions, and I want to share what I discovered. John and Missy point to quality of life as partially about the things we have and the way we spend our days. But they're also pointing to some kind of measurement. How do we measure quality? How do we measure life? And why does it need to be measured at all? So off to the dictionary. Quality. The standard of something, as measured, against other things of a similar kind, or the degree of excellence of something. Another definition, a distinctive attribute or characteristic possessed by someone or something. Okay, so even the word quality implies some kind of measurement. We compare one thing to another, and somehow we rank those things as being better or worse than the other. Or maybe on some scale that we've established. Perhaps we have a scale of absolute worst on one side and absolute best on the other. And then we find out where this thing we're looking at is on that wide spectrum. Of course, that means that you need an example of the worst of that thing and the best of that thing, and that's kind of problematic already. Maybe we should just stick to measuring things against each other. Now, for some reason, shoes popped into my mind as an example when I was thinking about this. I try on two different pairs of shoes at the store. Now, there's a lot of qualities that I could measure all at once. Which one fits me better? Which ones make me feel better? Which pair makes me look good? Which one will make others notice me and compliment me on my shoes? Which one has better construction? Which one can I dance in more easily? Are they appropriate for the wedding I'm going to? And will they go with that outfit? Or will I be able to wear them at many different occasions with many different outfits? And how much does each one cost, and are they worth the price? Now I'm measuring my work time, paid in dollars per hour, with the shoes at a particular price. So are the shoes I like better really worth 3 hours of my labor, or even a full day's wages? So here's the question, which one has the higher quality? You can see how complicated a decision about shoes can be, and now let's start applying the same question to your life. So how do you measure the quality of your life? What are your criteria? And how do you rank one aspect of life against the other? Like, is your family or your happiness more important? Well, that's a tough question. I'd answer they're both important. But of course, that doesn't help us measure the quality of our life. So I was thinking about the categories people use to measure the quality of their life. And there's all kinds of people, so there's all kinds of measurements. So I wrote them down, and as I mention each one, ask yourself, is this one of the ways I measure the quality of my life? And if one of them sounds right to you, I suggest you write it down. Here we go. I measure the quality of my life by the things I own and have. I measure my life by the way I spend my days at work and what I do with those hours. I measure my life by how I spend my days of leisure and how much I get to relax and have fun. I measure my life by the time I spend with my family and the quality of those interactions. I measure the quality of my life by the happiness and peace and joy that I'm experiencing right now and moment to moment. That's why we have mindfulness, by the way, because we want to get more and more to that one. I measure the quality of my life by how much I feel loved by others and how much love I get to share with others. I measure the quality of my life by the amount of time I get to spend with friends and relatives and colleagues. I measure my quality of life by how well and how deeply I connect with my partner and how those interactions feel. I measure the quality of my life by how much I get to learn and do new things and explore new places. And of course, if I were an explorer, that would be my number one. I measure the quality of my life by how easy it is for me to earn and have and save and spend money on things and experiences I want to have. I measure my life by the level and quality of the conversations I have with others. I measure my life by how my children and my parents and other family members are doing in their lives. I measure my life by how much choice I have to go where I want and do what I want. And of course, if I were living under a dictatorship, that would be probably number one. I measure my life by how others see me, how others think of me and measure me, This is my reputation or my image. I measure my life by how the things I own and have compare to the things other people own and have. I measure the quality of my life by what I know about particular subjects and how I compare to others in my field. That would be high priority for an academic. I measure my life by my specific job title and how many people I get to tell what to do. I measure my life by what groups I belong to and where I fit in and what that gives me access to. I measure my life by whether I know my purpose and whether I'm fulfilling my purpose. I measure my life by how close I feel to God and the relationship I have with God or spirit or life. And of course, there's many other ways to measure the quality of your life. Take a minute and write down any other categories you use to measure the quality of your life. Since our main focus is the topic of beliefs, you can see that every person believes that they're using the best standards to measure their own life. And it's certainly true that every person gets the right to choose their own standards, as long as their behavior doesn't harm anyone else. And Jordan mentioned some of the common beliefs that can get in the way of a person's achievement in any of those categories. I suggest you try each one on as I say it. Say it to yourself, out loud if you can, and say it as if you believe it 100%, so you can really feel what it feels like to hold that belief. If it feels very familiar when you say it, write it down. And then simply take the belief off like an outfit of clothes that doesn't fit and throw it aside. And if it doesn't feel familiar, just take it off like an outfit of clothes and throw it aside. Okay, here we go. Going to try out these beliefs. Feel each one as you say it and believe it 100% so you can really feel it. I don't deserve to have that. Try it on, see if it feels familiar, and then take it off. I'm not capable of doing that. Try it on, see if it feels familiar, and take it off. I'm not allowed to do that or have that. They won't let me. That's for other people. That'll never happen for me. I don't know enough. I'm not good enough. I never get the breaks I need. People like me never achieve that kind of thing. And here come three of the most popular. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I don't know the right people. And two more. I'll never measure up. I'll never qualify for that. And the last popular one, I'm caught in that endless cycle of work and bills and I just can't get out. Okay, I hope that was somewhat enlightening. If you identified with any of those beliefs, if they rang like a bell inside of you, you have some work to do to change those beliefs. You're in Lifebook, so you probably know that you're capable of anything you want in your life. Here's the rule. If anybody else has ever achieved that thing you want to achieve, you can achieve it too. If you apply the energy and the dedication and intelligence you have to the practice, to accomplishing that, and you do all the actions that are required to achieve it. This rule appears to be 100% true to me. At least I haven't seen any contradictions, any evidence to the contrary. The only limitations we have are the ones we impose on ourselves. Now, sometimes we believed the limitations that others placed on us, which really amounts to the same thing. Even if you were indoctrinated by a parent who constantly told you what a worthless waste of space and food you were, you'd have to believe them in order to limit yourself because of that. Even if you were abused in the worst way, and by the way, I coach people with unbelievable amounts of abuse and trauma in their lives, you'd still have to conclude that you deserved it in some way or there was something wrong with you in order for it to stop you from striving and healing and practicing and moving forward. I'd like you to imagine for a moment that every limitation you have in every category of life is just a false belief planted in you by someone who really didn't know who you are. They didn't recognize you for your uniqueness and your being precious and creative, a bright light, part of God, completely whole and beautiful no matter what. That's the truth they couldn't see because of their own beliefs, their own limitations, and their own blindness. So they made up stories about you that simply weren't true. This applies to every single limitation that you believe you have. In actuality, you are an unlimited being with unlimited creative power and unlimited love to give, and you can achieve anything. Take this message into your heart and say those same things to all the inner parts of you, especially your inner children. Now, we all have a lot of inner children. Often we have a wounded child and a sad child and a lonely child. We have one who decided that they were unworthy or one that feels unloved. Your job, should you choose to accept it, is to reparent yourself, to become the good mother or the good father that you didn't have to that child. And that's an important role, to love and care for the young parts of you that are inside of you. Think about what words you wanted your mother or father to say to you to know that you were loved and deserving of love. Whatever those words were, say those things to your inner children. How did you want to be held and touched by your parents? Probably with love and respect. Hold and touch your inner children in that way. Teach your inner children the truth about who they are. You are an unlimited being with unlimited creative power who can achieve anything. And now we're going to do a process together. First, think of one of those limitations that you believe about yourself. One of the terrible things that were said to you as a child that you ended up believing. And put it into as simple a sentence as possible. How would your child self have said it? For example, it might be, I'm a terrible person, or I'm a bad person, or I'll never amount to anything, or no one will ever love me. You always put it in first person as the truth, rather than you put it in an I form. Now, the deeper you can go into the terrible, bad, awful feelings, the more powerful results you'll get from this exercise. So write down the statement and then ask yourself, how would I have said this when I was a child? And simplify the statement if you can. And then you'll be closing your eyes. I'll give you a minute to do that. Good. Now I'd like you to take on that belief and say it to yourself as if you believe it 100%, even if there's another part of you that knows it isn't true. We're doing an experiment, so the more you can feel it and the more awful it feels, the better. You'll hear other parts of your mind protesting. They don't want you to say it. They don't want you to feel it. So look at them and tell them, right now, I'm a scientist of consciousness, and to do this experiment, I have to feel this belief fully, so just step aside so I can do the experiment. Now, that usually gets them to pipe down. And if it doesn't, just ignore their chatter and their counter-arguments while we do this inner work. Again, say the belief out loud and feel what it feels like to believe that. Let your body really feel how bad it is. We have to get to the feeling level of the mind in order to change an old belief. Okay, now you're really feeling it, as awful as it is. I'd like you to recognize that who's actually feeling this is an inner child. Your inner child believes that belief and is feeling that feeling. And I'd like you to use your imagination to go to that inner child, wherever they are. You can simply follow the feeling to where they are, kind of like tracking an animal by its scent. And when you get there, you may be surprised at how the child looks or where they are. But allow that image to just come to you rather than trying to create it consciously. Follow the feelings to the inner child who's feeling that feeling and believing that negative belief. You may see a very clear picture, or it might be fuzzy and indistinct, or you might only feel it. Any way you perceive the child is just fine. Take whatever you get and work with it. If you need more time, turn off the recording until you've located your inner child. Okay, you've found your inner child. Notice how much pain they're in because they believe this thing about themselves. The first thing to do is just open your heart and with great compassion and love, focus that compassion on them, kind of like a lighthouse beam. You know, whatever happened to make them believe it was awful for them. And they concluded that this belief was true, or they believed the other person when they said it. Let your love and compassion for this child fill you up, and let your heart expand and hold that child. Okay, good. Now physically approach the child and pick them up in your arms. Take them out of that place, whatever the circumstance is, whatever the environment is, take them out of there and bring them to a beautiful place that you know of. It might be a forest or a beach or a beautiful home or a playground, wherever they'd be most comfortable. And keep holding them tight. Children need to feel your strength holding them so they can feel secure. Good. Now find a place to sit down, still holding this precious child who's been hurt. And say to them the following words, and feel free to modify them in any way you wish. These are the basic truths and messages that all children need to hear. And by the way, they're also things we need to hear as adults. Repeat these phrases after me and say it to your child in such a way that they really hear you and believe you. Are you ready? Here we go. Look into your child's eyes and say, I've got you now, and I'm going to make sure that you're safe. I'm here with you and I'm not going away. I see you and I know who you are. You are a bright light. You're lovable and you deserve to be loved. You're a good person and you just got caught up in some bad circumstances. It's not your fault. That person who treated you that way should never have done that. You don't deserve to be treated that way. No child deserves that. You are precious to me. You deserve to be happy because you're a wonderful child. Your only job is to play and to learn and be happy. You are part of the divine, and the divine is perfect, so you are perfect just the way you are. There's nothing wrong with you. That's just a false belief, and you can let it go. You are creative and capable. You can achieve anything you set your mind to. You have a good mind and a good heart and a good body. You deserve to be taken care of. I want to be your new mommy or daddy. Would you like that? Would you like to live with me? I have a special place for you, a beautiful home here in my heart, where I can love you and care for you all the time. Would you like to come live in my beautiful home? Good. So now follow whatever the child wants. If they say they want to go back to their parents' home, take them there. And give them a guardian, such as an animal, who will love and protect them. And then give them a big hug and kiss and tell them that they can come to you anytime in order to get your attention and your love. If they want to go play, give them a big hug and kiss and let them run off and play. And if they want to go with you to your home, imagine a beautiful home that you would want to live in a beautiful place, and build it in your imagination inside your heart. And then simply take up the child, fly to that place with the child in your arms, and then begin to show them around the house, including their special bedroom, and tell them that they can now go play and explore, and give them a big hug and kiss. Okay, great. Now gently withdraw your attention from that scene and return to your body. And feel that scene inside your heart. And flow your love and your care to that little one there inside your home. Take on the role of the good mother or the good father, and know that you'll be a much better parent to your inner child than your parents were to you. Take a breath. Open your eyes and look around. The world might appear a little bit different than it did before. How do you feel? I encourage you to rest deeply and take really good care of yourself for the rest of the day and night and tomorrow. You can go to that place in your heart and check on your child anytime you want. Make it a point to visit them at least once a day for the coming week. If you can relax or take a hot bath or go for a walk in nature, you'll be able to integrate this good work that you've done today. Feel free to listen to this recording again with another one of the beliefs you wrote down, and another, and another. Thank you for your attention and your love and your care. Until the next time, I send my best wishes and love to you and to your inner child.